Yeah, so I think as we continue with the theme of, you know, ways to look into the future and how we can think about investing in a holistic and sustainable way, we are going to try to focus on opportunities focused on people. So we've got Joel and James who are also visiting us via Zoom. Hi, guys. So today we have a great panel, and the focus, as you know, is going to be on people-centered investments that we can think about for the future. So if you want to take it away, Noah,
yeah,
and tell everybody what you do and what you focus on.
Gotcha. Hi, guys. My name's Joe. I recently graduated from Walsh University, and I founded a startup while I was there. It's this reusable water bottle company. To keep it short and simple, for every 1,000 we sell, we build a water well in a low-income nation. To date, in a little over a year, we've drilled 21 and given over 50,000 people clean water.
Thanks. And then James, do you want to kick it off and then we can pop into the room?
Yes, my name is James Oliver Jr. I'm the founder and CEO of the Parentpreneur Foundation, where we empower Black parentpreneurs so they can leave a legacy for their beautiful Black children. And Chelsea Elliott is there representing us in person, and she's a beloved member of our community. She's a new entrepreneur and a multiple-time grantee of our organization, and she lives in Columbus.
How working with James has helped impact your organization and the support you've received from working with Parentpreneur?
Sure. So my name is Chelsea Elliott. I'm the founder of SomoCom Lab, where I focus on emotional intelligence and the mental well-being of children. So working with the Parentpreneur Foundation, when I started my company, I, you know, have two little tiny kids at home working full time from home, and I found the foundation, and the amount of support from everyone in the foundation, especially James, has been major. So started it last year, and you know, working with the foundation, I've been able to receive the grant funding. I've been able to sell almost 500 of my comfort kits for kids, in order for them to understand their emotions and navigate self-regulation for themselves. And so the foundation has been major for the growth and development of my business. The funding that I've received has helped with a lot of professional development and different resources and tools that I needed access to that I didn't have on my own. So it's a major way that they help.
That's fantastic. Do you want to tell us a little about your organization and who you are?
Sure. I'm Cedric Riley. I'm the founder of the Pride Empowerment Network. We're on a mission to motivate all 400,000 youth and families throughout the foster care system. And we solve the relationship building problem that faces those people who are involved in that space.
Good afternoon. I'm representing Wolf on the impact, but my name's Durshan Vyas, co-founder of Loud Capital here in Columbus. We have offices throughout US. However, you know, we started in Columbus with a mission to help grow early stage companies and a lot of women focused, minority focused. We've spun off a lot of special purpose vehicles, funds focused on certain targeted communities. And, you know, our whole purpose is really rising all tides within the Midwest. You know, we have a underserved market here in the Midwest, lack of resources, and, you know, there could be a hundred of other firms here and it still wouldn't be enough to support. So we're very happy to be here.
I'm RP Covarrubia. I'm chairman and CEO of Covarrubia and Company. We're an ESG focused family office. So we focus on trying to take traditional assets and transition them over to being ESG focused and focusing on all three of the letters, not just one, but, you know, environmental, social, and governance, ensuring that we create a platform that allows, you know, traditional companies to operate the way the future should look, you know, having a diverse board, having proper governance to avoid certain you know, fraud issues when we're acquiring businesses. And the social impact is, you know, we want to invest in companies that, you know, invest in the communities that they sit in and make sure their employees have a long-term outlook, like John talks about with his fund. So that's essentially what we do.
Thank you. And Joel?
Yeah, hello, everyone. I'm Joel Van Kuyken, and I'm sorry I can't be with you in Ohio. Can everyone hear me okay? Good. So I am a co-founder of the Delta Project. We are a nonprofit here in Grand Rapids, Michigan that's focused on juvenile justice reform. And we work with young men dealing with the juvenile justice system, either on probation or incarcerated, helping them become something they don't see. And we really do that by narrative story change and really giving a voice to the young men really working to find their way, and again, to kind of see things differently so that we can start to see them as at potential and not at risk. And so that they can become the leaders in our community that we need them to be going into this decade and decades beyond. And Calvante is also on the call with me. Calvante joined us in Chicago. I just want to give a shout out to Calvante and just happy to see all of you and looking forward to seeing you in Michigan as well.
Hi, Calvante. Do you want to say a few words of your experience in Chicago and since you've left, what's been going on?
Hi, everybody. Can everybody hear me out there? All right. Yeah, I'm Calvante Liptrot. I'm also a part of the Delta Project. I was originally one of the first few students who joined the project and the program. And like you said, it's just looking at, instead of looking at risk, we're looking at potential. And so we're making everything happen. Just, and now that I got the ball in my hands, I'm trying to pass it down and continue the cycle and everything. I've been working on a lot of different stuff. The experience in Chicago was amazing. Just being around so many different people, different brackets of every different kind of thing possible. It was amazing. And I'm glad to be a part of the Delta Project. I'm glad to be a part of 361. And the impact that you guys are making, I'm glad that I can pass it down to some of my people. I've been doing a lot of different work in the community. People ask questions like, I never seen you in a suit before. I seen you dressed up. What were you doing in Chicago? And I'm answering a lot of questions over the last few weeks and just filling people in on the impacts and stuff that's being made in the world. A lot of this stuff isn't seen where I'm from. So it's just all a matter of making it visual.
And you know, a lot of times when we are in these conferences, we forget to turn and look at the people in the audience and say thank you, because we bring, you know, people like Calvante, we have amazing panelists, and we never stop to sit and say thank you for showing up, for being here, you know, for making a difference, for actually taking the time to educate yourself. I mean, in Cincinnati, we spoke about resilience and the importance of resilience, right? Now we're talking about changing portfolios. How do we focus on ESG? Why? You know, asking these questions is so important. So I just want to tell you guys, thank you so much. To pose a question to the panel, why now do you think it's important for folks to start thinking about changing their portfolios to ESG? If you want to just pass the mic down. And feel free, everybody can answer that question who's doing impact funds.
From my viewpoint, it's I was a Wall Streeter previously, and you know, always having, you know, that, you know, fiduciary distance between you and a portfolio company was always a little unnerving, because they could, you know, essentially they operate autonomously because you can't do certain things. And so 6 years ago, I started CNC to, you know, step into companies, and then from there, you start to realize some companies are just operating backwards. And taking the real meaning of ESG and why companies should transition to understanding, how can I be more environmentally friendly? How can I have better governance? How can I be, you know, a more impact on society instead of, you know, just focusing on profits? ESG does allow for profits to occur, and from our experience, more fluidly. Transitioning, say, like you know, a standard portfolio company into ESG allows you to move into other sectors more fluidly than, say, if you were, you're just trying to get into an ESG fund, you wouldn't have exposure the same way as taking a traditional business and optimizing it, because that's what you're doing. You're taking a business that, sure, does 20% margins, great. You're still getting a decent EBITDA, but transitioning it over, you're getting more benefits long-term. And that's just what we have found out over time.
Before we even join, I think we've always been impact driven. My background, I sold a company in 2015, and I had the opportunity to interact with a lot of underserved entrepreneurs with great ideas, and all they needed was some guidance. And a lot of people think capital is usually the answer, but it's not. A lot of people need networks, they need capital, they need just guidance. And our name Loud Capital comes from the fact that we're not silent investors, but we're active and loud. So whenever we invest in companies, we actually want to make sure that we can help grow the business. But from an impact standpoint, there's lots of as I mentioned, profitable companies that with the right guidance can provide impact. For example, we have a mobile anesthesia company in our portfolio, and a lot of people just think, oh, it's mobile anesthesia, but then when you look at the impact that's provided to the rural areas of children that accessible to healthcare and all that stuff, I mean, that provides significant improvements to those communities and things like that. So I believe in almost any business, there could be an impact driven strategy that could be implemented. So I think this is a wonderful opportunity to just collaborate together.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, James empowering people within your network, it's the access. And we've got Ann Mooney in the room who provides access, right? So you went to Uganda. Tell us about how that was and the impact it created for your life.
Yeah, so I mean, originally it was just clean water. We sell 1,000 bottles, we go drill a well, we give them clean water. But what I've learned is it extends far beyond just clean water. We created like 12 different jobs just on the team that we work with directly, let alone the councils and the communities, the security guards at every single well. And that's something that I've realized more and more of after being around all you guys, is you all create impact through the jobs that you create. And it's something I've learned over time, is it's not just about giving people clean water. I mean, you can go over there and you see people, there's an orphanage where, I mean, they literally dug a hole at the bottom of a hill and water, just gravity took it to the spot. And these kids at 5 a.m. would walk through the jungle with a milk jug, and they'd fill it up. And before they had access to clean water, I mean, there was over 100 cases of malaria, over 10 of typhoid, and it just wasn't good. But it's amazing to see how people in this room and everyone here can make their own ripple effect in their own way.
That's amazing. I mean, it's experiences like this that prove that profit for purpose work, right? It works. And I think we give people and we match opportunities and access, I mean, it's so empowering. So I thank everybody in the room for just empowering, like guys like Noah. Are there any final questions or points that you guys would like to raise or speak on?
Yeah, Jane? I would love to, if I could. So we're not an impact fund, but we are a nonprofit or foundation. And can you hear me okay? Okay. I can't hear you guys anymore, just all of a sudden. I heard you fine before, now I can't hear you. So I'll just speak very quickly. So we started 2 years ago, and we are making an impact with the 1,900 Black Parentpreneurs in our community. We have given $100,000 in grants in the last 2 years since we started. We've paid for 320 mental therapy sessions for the members of our community, which for us is enormous, because historically in the Black community, mental health has been stigmatized. So we are shattering those stigmas and those stereotypes. And we're very keen to spend our social capital as we accumulate it to help lift up the people in our community. So perfect example, I mean, Chelsea's a great example. We helped her launch her product. We helped her get national exposure. She's been on SiriusXM radio 3 times now, I think. And most recently is a young lady in our community who's a grantee. We helped her raise $1 million for her startup. So we are having an impact as well as a nonprofit for the members of our community. But I can't hear you.
Were you recently?
Sorry, go ahead. I can't hear you.
Joel, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
I can hear you now.
Okay, I think you can. Can you hear us now?
Yes.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit briefly about what you were on the news for and your organization?
Yeah, sure. So just last week, I mean, we were able to take part in an opportunity to write about the children of incarcerated parents. So Cole and I put together a blog post about really the fact that so many kids under 18 years old are living in our society with parents in jail, locked up, and the impact that that's having on our communities. So we were able to go on our local NPR station and really talk about our Young Fathers Initiative and the realities of this problem. And we're just beginning to gain a lot of traction working with young fathers, giving them opportunities to spend that time with their children from 0 to 5 years, where all of that presence of a father is so needed and all the development that's happening. And we just feel like the impact that we're making is really trying to get upstream and start to impact kids, 0 to 5 year old, up to teenagers, who can become, again, you know, the leaders in our society that we need. So I don't want to dominate too much, but I just feel like the Delta Project has seen real growth since we were in Chicago, tangible growth and opportunities to tell our story and to really impact a community here that is really divided between, you know, red and blue, white and black, you know, a society here that had a recent police shooting that was really devastating. And a real need for us to come together.
Joel, and yeah, I mean, as we continue, you know, we're learning, and we say this all the time, we don't know everything, but we're trying. And I think it's just the fact that we're even trying to figure out how to best do philanthropy and impact within 361 is fantastic, because you're seeing results. I mean, Joel is a testament to that, and we will be continuing this in Michigan, and we're going to put together a great program. So I'm happy to see you guys there. So thank you so much for taking the time out to listen to us, and thanks everybody on the panel as well. Do we have any questions for the panelists or comments, impact, philanthropy?
There's a lot of reports about greenwashing. What standards do you guys use for your ESG? What are you using for ESG standards? Because it's a little confusing these days with the headlines coming out.
Actually, I had a very good, interesting conversation with someone from KKR about this. And you know, our question on greenwashing is, how are, like, let's use an example, oil and gas being really, really bad about it, you know, saying, hey, we're investing in, you know, XY solar panels, but reality is, hey, haven't offset their carbon footprint by anything. So you got to look at what traditional assets are doing and then benchmark them against actual environmental companies, say like Bloom Energy, that's going out there and actually doing what they're saying they're doing. Enel is a good one, because we're mainly focused on the energy sector. They're selling a lot of their old antiquated assets and repurposing those profits to then buy solar and wind projects and waste product type projects. So you got to take the original benchmarks and then start benchmarking them against companies that are actually doing what they say they're going to do. And the SEC is putting together that framework. KKR has got a very, very good framework on what a portfolio company should look like from an ESG standpoint. So if you're specifically asking for your purposes and your LPs, KKR has got a great framework. And I've even told KKR they should tell the SEC to use their mandate as a flagship for what the SEC should be looking at. Because I'm sure everyone's heard about the Deutsche Bank situation with greenwashing. It's a huge problem in the ESG space, and bankers who take advantage of it they need to pay the price, and there needs to be higher penalties for those type of problems.
Other questions, comments?
Of course.
You take the girl out of Brooklyn, but
what?
Take the girl out of Brooklyn.
Yeah. Sarah Trubridge here, and I just want to commend those of you who are working to also change the language that we use around so many social issues. So for instance, I'm on a bandwagon, I work with youth who say to me, don't call me at risk. I'm not at risk. The environment I'm from is at risk, but I'm not. And so I like the fact that you use the term at promise. It's what's happening also, where we're hearing people talk about the victims of. We need to change that to say survivors of. I did gang work, and there are survivors of, and worked with kids who were incarcerated. The other word that is just getting overused over and over again is trauma. And we're creating schools, communities, and institutions that are boasting about being trauma-centered or trauma-sensitive. And I want people to start thinking from a positive strengths-based where, yes, people have engaged in trauma, but let's create places that are healing-centered so that it's a strengths-based transition and you're not labeling the person who's looking for services as having had trauma and staying in that place. They're now healing. So it's just the power of language. And you, for those people who are working with marginalized communities, the fact that you invite their voices to the table and in the conversation cannot be emphasized enough. So I thank you for all of you who are doing that work.
Very true.
In fact, we both went to, a lot of people in this room went to Denison, and our president, we have a new wellness center, and he said, yes, we do, but we need to change the narrative, to your point, where we have this design your career. You need to be thinking of designing, Calvante, you're sort of doing it. You're in control. We're here to be helpful and support. And, this could be the most resilient generation if we get it right. Think of what we just went through. But we need to change that narrative. Come join our 361 firm community of investors and thought leaders. We have a lot of events created by the community as we collaborate on investments and philanthropic interests. Join us.